Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. This is John Krasinski from The Athletic. And if you are used to hearing Jim Suhan's voice at the top of The John Krasinski Show, really, we should be hearing my voice at the top of The John Krasinski Show because it is The John Krasinski Show and not The Jim Suhan Show. But we'll leave that for another day. Jim Suhan is traveling to Tokyo for the Olympics and is going to be gone this week. And so I'm taking over the total hosting duties of the show while Jim is over there. And so in my place as the Wolves expert and as the brains of the operation, we are going to have and delighted to be joined by Dane Moore from Blue Wire Pods. Everyone knows the Dane Moore Show, Timberwolves analyst, maven, great podcaster, great writer at Once a Time. Dane, do your fingers still work? Have they gotten rusty now that you've kind of just gone over to the dark side of podcasting and are no longer writing as much?
They still work, but they have a 240 character limit is the problem.
Well, hey, that'll happen. You know, I think that happened to Bill Simmons too, so be careful. But it worked out for him okay. So maybe some way down the line, you'll like sell your podcast for $200 million and everything will be great.
So. I still watch the games.
Good point. Well, thanks for joining us, man. We're going to talk a lot about the Timberwolves today, a lot about the NBA today. Dane and I have kind of crossed paths on each other's pods over the years. This might be your maiden voyage on the John Krasinski Show, though. But I've been on yours and it's been great. So this will be kind of a good opportunity to, right before the draft, right before free agency, to just kind of get a lay of the land of where we are, of where we think the Wolves might go, of all of those things that are going to be involved. So we'll break that down here in a minute. Just a reminder that we are brought to you by TSR Injury Law. Steve Terry, Rich Runin, and everyone has been a longtime sponsor of the podcast. We're very thankful for them. And we will get to a little bit more about them a little bit later. We're also brought to you by Manscaped, and everyone loves to hear me read those Manscaped ads, and we will do that a little bit later in the show as well. But to start off, Dane, how's it going, first of all? Everything good with you this summer?
Well, one, I'm pretty bummed I don't get to hear that read live. But
you'll hear it. Don't worry about that.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry
good, about good,
that.
Good.
You'll hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, man. No, summer's good. It's I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way. And just it's been obviously a bizarre year, but basketball wise, it's just been so jammed. And I even feel now, you know, with these playoffs, it's been like a gift. I feel when there's 3 days off between an NBA Finals game, because as you remember, when we're covering the season, obviously we're doing it from home, but it was just insane of every other night. I mean, it's something I've never experienced in my career doing this, and you wouldn't have either, where it was so rapid. And really my head's going to next year of like, what are we going to, like, is this going to work? Like, are the players going to be awake? Like, is Josh Okogie? I mean, I've never seen him have any problems with energy, but that's where my head kind of is with this, particularly with the Olympics. And I'm thinking about Booker and Middleton and Holiday getting on a plane like on Friday.
I cannot believe they're going.
It's insane. I cannot believe it. It's insane. And quite frankly, like, I'm nervous. I'm nervous about injuries, and I don't understand why people are like, well, I don't know if the injuries are up or not. It's like, let's use some logic here, right? Like, what happens when you like work more, or you exert your body more often? Like, it is, I don't know. I think this year has been super bizarre, and I think next year has as well. So I don't know why that was my answer to how I'm doing, but that's what's going on in my head right now.
But yeah, no, it, like you think about it, it's easy to think sort of, you know, when we were in the grind, you know, us, the journalists, the media and stuff, like it's a grind for us just to kind of, you know, every night or every other night, it's a game. You're either doing a podcast, you're writing stories, you're doing all that. And you're thinking at the end of it, you're thinking, you know, gosh, I'm a little bit spent after all that. And we're not even playing in these games. Like, we're not the ones that are going through it and being and doing all the physicality and doing all those things. And so now not only are they going to shift back next season, it seems like, to more normal schedule, all 82 games, like everything like that. But there, it's again going to be a very shortened off season. I mean, we're talking, you know, the finals are going to be over at some point in the next two games, right? And then right into draft, right into free agency. And then you got like 3 weeks basically before people are going to start showing up at gyms in September and getting ready for training camp. It's just insane.
It is. And I know people aren't going to want to hear us like complaining about being tired about like watching NBA games and stuff like that. But I actually do think it's a decent point. And for me and for you too, I know just having talked during the season, it was the most exhausting year of the season. There were like multiple periods of time, 6 week periods of time where they never had 2 days off between games. Like That's a fact. That happened on the Timberwolves schedule twice, which is exhausting, you know, and there just is no, we normally have August, right, where we have that time to kind of catch our breath and, you know, really be bored about the Timberwolves for a month. There's just nothing to write about. But this year August is going to have free agency and summer league. And then I really think a lot of the players are going to be, back by the beginning of September. What I think I've heard like training camp, September 24th, maybe something like that. It's gonna be here soon. So I guess we have to talk about the Timberwolves offseason right now. We have to do it right now.
We got to get it in or else it's going to just flash by us, you know, before we know it. But to kind of transition into that a little bit, Dane, let's first talk about the playoffs a little bit. And what I want to kind of really focus in on a little is some Timberwolves elements to it in terms of like what we have seen. And what's been really interesting to me is that you know, obviously you get Phoenix and Milwaukee all the way through. They're kind of the last team standing. They've gone by war of attrition, all of those things. It's been, you know, really fun to watch. But to me, one of the interesting things is if you're looking at it through a Wolves lens, you've seen Devin Booker and really Trae Young too. Let's throw him into it. Go into the conference finals. Good stats, bad team guys, right? Prior to this run, like these were guys that, hey, are they really affecting winning? Can they be the types of players who evolve into carrying their teams? And Booker is, you know, down. He's down 3-2 in the finals, but I don't care. Like he's made it to the finals. He's been unbelievable. Right. Like let's not parse things too much and just say, well, he's scoring 40, but they're not winning in the finals. So does it really matter? Yeah, I think it matters. So in terms of that, I mean, obviously we have seen Karl Anthony Towns carry this label of good stats, bad team guy. Does he really affect winning? Can he be a guy that that galvanizes and doesn't just put up the points, but really kind of matures into the type of player that can raise the level of the team around him and really use those stats to affect winning? Do you think that these can be apples to apples and that you can actually see Towns making that next step the way that Booker and Young have seemed to do this year?
Well, one, I think Booker and Trae are a little bit different, but two, I think Cat is different than both of them as well. Cat came into the league day one, rookie year, as a well above average efficiency offensive player. Like for both Trae and for sure for Booker, I know I was looking at Booker's stats the other day, like his first 3 years in the league, his true shooting percentage was like well below average. He wasn't an efficient scorer. And, you know, there's the knock on all three of their defenses since they've been in the league the whole time. Booker has come on as a scorer, as an efficient scorer the past 3 years. And I thought this year, really impressively, even during the regular season, he came on as somebody who really started to care about defense. The weird part about Cat is I think if we would have had this conversation 12 months ago, we would have been talking about how Cat is a level or two above Trae or Booker, you know? And I know Booker might have made, did Booker make the All-Star team last year or like 2 years ago? He's made it the past year,
I think. Yeah, last year. I don't know that he did 2 years ago. I'm not sure. But
yeah, well, I just think that's just the weird part about Cat, right, is that he's gotten the good stats, bad team label, but his stats have actually been incredible. There wasn't any hole to really poke in them, on the offensive side of the ball at least. But with Trae and with Booker, you know, there have been. So I had always put Cat higher than that. But now you see what has kind of transpired out in these past 12 months. And I don't think you're going to see Cat above Devin Booker or Trae Young on any, you know, top 100 players in the league list come next season. And I think the biggest element to that is what we saw out of Trae for sure in the playoffs is him empowering his other teammates, right? And we've definitely seen Booker, you know, be willing to cede the bigger role to Chris Paul at different times as well. And with Cat, partially because his teammates have largely not been very good throughout his career, but for other reasons as well. Like, it's always been hard for me to watch Cat or leave a season of the Timberwolves and say, which players did Cat really elevate on this team? Can I draw a direct parallel between that? Like, obviously he helps everyone because he's good, but he's always been one of those type of players. And so maybe for Cat, the next step is doing that next year, where maybe the numbers aren't better, but the year's going to go by. We're going to be 50 games in the season. We're going, man, Cat had a massive impact on D'Angelo Russell, or Cat had a profound impact on Jaden McDaniels, where you can really draw that line. I just feel like we haven't seen that as much. And we did see that with Trae Young in the playoffs. And we did see that with Devin Booker all season.
Don't you think, though, did we see that to some degree down the stretch? I mean, this year, I mean, it seemed like once Cat returned, then you had, you know, Ant had more space.
Yeah.
You know, D'Angelo. Now, it wasn't quite like the overwhelming level that we saw with Trae in the playoffs, with maybe with Booker to some extent. But I do think that we started to see a little bit of that. And you can at least see the outlines of, okay, this is the difference that he makes when he's on the court, at least offensively.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I guess there's like the geometry of it, and Cat has always helped the geometry, because if your center can stand beyond the three-point arc at 40%, I mean, that's why Ant's numbers at the rim really rocketed at the end of the season. So I guess you're right there, and maybe I'm just talking about this in more of like an existential or like personality connection sort of way. But I'd like to see, I guess, both of those things come together. And optimistically, glass half full, if those things do come together, that is really where you start talking about a leap, right, with this team. Mm-hmm. And it's how you do the Suns thing, right? Like, the Suns are not all that far removed from being exactly where the Timberwolves are. And I know a lot of people point to Chris Paul in that equation, but it's the cliche, it's the greater than the sum of your parts. And I don't think, in my opinion, in the aggregate, I don't think Cat has contributed to his teams being greater than the sum of their parts. I think he's contributed to himself being great. And I think that's just he wouldn't be the first star player for that to take a few years to kind of click into gear.
Right. And I think that building off of what you said, and I've heard you and Britt talk about this too on your pod, I totally agree with you that if we did a top 100 today, or let's say we surveyed like 15 top 100 players in the league lists that are going to come out in September, to get those clicks from all over the place. Trae Young and Devin Booker will both be ahead of Cat. Obviously, the other thing that I think is, a no-brainer and there is no argument for is that Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic are going to be far ahead of Cat, and there was a time not too long ago where those three were contemporaries, were all peers that seemed to be on a similar level, and they all seemed to beat up on each other. Cat would always take it to Jokic. Jokic was always take it to Embiid. Embiid would always take it to Cat. And there was like this sort of little big man rivalry between the three of them, and they were all jockeying for position. Cat is way back now behind those two. But I think one of the things that I wonder if people really understand or take into account is that Cat has not played a lot of basketball in the last 2 years.
Totally.
And he certainly has not practiced in the last 2 years. Like, I mean, all last summer, I don't think he picked up a basketball all summer long while he was going through the grief of his mother and all this. I'm not even blaming him for it. I'm just saying that's the reality of the situation is I don't think he worked on his game much at all last summer. He was injured the last year before the pandemic started. The year before that, he was injured a lot. And it just seems like he, while Embiid and Jokic have been able to continue to play and work on their game and hone their craft, he has fallen back on that. And so if you want to be a Wolves optimist, maybe this is the summer where he's able to sort of refocus and work with the coach
exactly. too about the way he's going to be used. I mean, I remember, I don't know, it was after some Nuggets or Sixers game where I was doing a pod after it and just kind of like looking into the ways that Embiid had been used different. And that was a huge shift for both Embiid and Jokic. And, and credit to Doc, credit to Mike Malone. Part of the reason that those guys exploded as the top two most valuable players in the league this year were in conjunction with the way that they were being used, right? We saw less Embiid existing on the top of the break. I mean, he still had to be there sometimes, but you saw a lot more isolation that was going to get him to the free throw line, and that exploded all of his actions, like within the rim and the 3-point line. His efficiency and production in those areas exploded. We saw Jokic being used more efficiently. We know Malone has been in conversation with Jokic for years, dating back to the way they changed defense, and Jokic has shed his awful defender thing. And I think it's so important to be in communication as a coach with your best player about, hey, how do you want to play? How can we use you? Let's have a back and forth here to make this happen. And I don't think any fault of Ryan Saunders. Like, as you said, Cat was off in a different place, in a different part of his life where he couldn't, I don't think he was working on his game on the floor, nor was he like, all right, what is my next thing to make my, you know, to make another step forward this year? Whereas you go back to 2019-20, I mean, remember the beginning of that year where Cat exploded out of the gate.
Yes.
And a lot of that he was being used completely different, right? Beginning of the season, he's shooting 10 threes per game above the break, or he's down in the dunker and he's setting screens for Wig, right? And it was
He was in great shape. He was just sharp. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I mean, and you reference a pod with Britt, and you know, and I've talked about the top centers in the league and where Cat goes, where he would, you know, fall in those sort of things. And I think he's gonna get buried by a lot of people. I think people put Ayton above him. I think people will put Bam, Gobert for sure, that sort of thing. But what people are sleeping on is the context of Cat. And I don't know if Cat's gonna have as good of a summer right now as he did in 2019. But if he has a 2019 summer right now, he works with Chris Finch to find an optimal way to use him. It is not like out of the question at all that Cat comes out of the gate first 20 games of the season this next year and is insanely productive, perhaps the most productive of his whole career. That would not blow my mind at all.
Yep. And there will be, you know, if that does happen, there will be the kind of market correction that comes, and it really is just kind of prisoner of the moment analysis. And that's not it's not even against anyone who is saying it right now of, hey, you know, Jokic, Embiid, yeah, DeAndre Ayton's going to get a lot of love. You know, we can have the Gobert debates and all those other things, Capella, that stuff. But I mean, the bottom line is that when you are on a team and when you are playing, when you're eliminated from contention by midseason, people forget about you.
Nobody watched the Timberwolves the second half of the year. That's why
it's why the rookie of the year thing was so lopsided. And I'm not even saying LaMelo shouldn't have been, but like literally people had no idea that Anthony Edwards was as good as he was down the stretch because they totally checked out. And so it's going to be up to all of these guys to come into camp next year in better shape, locked in with what Finch wants them to do, understanding the things that they need to do better and improve on. And it can't always just be a, you know, for Cat, it can't just be, you know, a woe is me either in terms of like, I don't have the people around me or, you know, another coaching change and stuff.
He's got the
people. Yeah, now he does. Yep. And now he does. And so like that's to me is going to be, you know, that's the key because I don't think personally, you know, as we sit here right now, you know, in mid to late July, that the Chris Paul type move is coming for the Wolves. Like, you know, I mean, we can talk about Ben Simmons and we will talk about him a little bit, but I just think that's going to be exceedingly difficult to pull off. So then you're looking probably more at somewhat minor tweaks to the roster. And so if that's the case, then it's got to be Cat. It's got to be Ant. It's got to be D'Lo. It's got to be them raising their levels.
D'Lo. Yeah. Like, I don't think if the Wolves, again, if they come out and we're 20 games into the season and they're like 13-7, yes, that Cat thing that we just talked about has happened, which I don't think is crazy. But I really think it's D'Lo. Like, if D'Lo has an awesome summer and D'Lo comes out and is playing at a really high level, which I believe he's capable of, I think that is the, you know, to get all talk show with it. That's the X factor. Like, I really think D'Angelo Russell has capabilities in him to do a lot of the things we've seen these players like Trae Young, like Devin Booker do, to show you a level that you question them ever having before. Like, he is the player on this team that if the Timberwolves are good and make the playoffs and somehow get a sixth seed, it's because D'Angelo Russell is like in the All-Star conversation. And that's the thing I keep going back to with this team as I kind of look at the offseason. I'm like, well, this is the roster. That's a bummer. Like 13 guys under contract, no cap space, no nothing. And you try and find the glass half full. Every time I look at the glass half full, I don't really see another path other than Cat showing up and being the star that he can be. And then D'Angelo Russell really, I mean, saying like a Julius Randle type thing. You know what I'm kind of talking about? Where Julius Randle was a little written
for
off.
For sure.
But there is that. He was a lot written off.
Yeah.
right. So that's what I keep going back to in my head when I think about this season and if it can be exciting and special and, I mean, a playoff team. A lot of it to me goes back to D'Angelo Russell.
And that's going to be the interesting part too, is because like with Julius Randle, I don't think that anyone ever necessarily doubted like his mindset, his mentality, like his work ethic that way. But I think that it was always clear that he was applying whatever that he was learning in the wrong ways, and that he was approaching the game the wrong way, and that it just was not going well for him from the style of play and the approach aspects. I think with D'Lo, it's more, if you talk to skeptics of him, it's more, this kid isn't tough enough mentally. This kid isn't the guy that you're going to want to get behind. And I'm not even saying he has to be a rah-rah, you know, rally around guy, but people do just really forget, we're not paying attention to, he played really, really well down the stretch. But I still think like there is like this sort of sheen around D'Angelo and around Cat that are like, I'm not going to trust these guys. These aren't the guys you want to be in the foxhole with.
I think too, you got to let him play his way. And that's a big.
Oh yeah. He made that clear.
He made that clear. He's not going to not play his way. Right. And again, I go back to Julius Randle. Like Julius Randle didn't quote unquote fix his shot selection like people wanted him to. I mean, Randle back with the Lakers, Pelicans, the first year with the Knicks, like he was a guy who was taking a lot of shots that you would say, you know, those we can get a better look than that, or those aren't the quote unquote efficient shots. But instead with Tibbs, they designed an offense that empowered him, you know, to be that shot maker. They got their, again, quote unquote, efficient shots with their lobs to Noel, their lobs to Robinson at the rim, their corner shooting from Bullock, their penetration from Rose. And Randle was the creator. And credit to him, you know, he made those tough shots at a higher level. But the idea of like fixing D'Angelo Russell and his shot selection, like, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Like, you're not going to be like, oh, okay, D'Lo's a layup and 3-point guy. No. Like, if you want to make him work, you need to empower his style within the context of this team. And that's on Chris Finch.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, I mean, when I kind of think about how we look at, you know, what he can do for you. I mean, it's not just like, I'm trying to get my mind around when he is at his best. Obviously, he's got to feel like he has been empowered, like he's doing things the way that because the other part about it is that what I wonder if is as he's watching these playoffs and he's watching Devin Booker, Chris Paul, you know, even Middleton to an extent, mid-range themselves to the finals. Like, that's one of the things that was kind of a tug and a pull early, too. Right. Is that, hey, we want threes. We want layups here. And D'Angelo Russell is saying, hey, no, I'm going to take that mid-range shot because I'm really good at it and I'm comfortable there and it can be a good shot. That will be, you know, that's going to be something that and I do think that Finch will show a little bit more adaptability rather than, you know, dogma towards some of that stuff to make D'Angelo Russell feel comfortable, do some things to make Edwards feel comfortable, Cat, whatever you have there.
Yeah, I mean, we're learning in the playoffs, and this is a good reminder, and this happens every year, is the value of that shot. And the ability to go in isolation late in the clock and be able to pull up from 16 feet and make that shot. And now in the regular season, you don't need that as much, but you do still have late shot clock situations all the time. You're not going to give the ball to Cat at the top of the key and be like, all right, 4 seconds left, go to work. Like, he just doesn't have the creation ability to be able to do that quickly. D'Lo does. And you want that player on your team, you know, to be decently efficient in those actions. A killer for the Wolves in the Wiggins era was he was that guy, and he was not an effective shooter in those areas, right? So it's just never going to be this, like, peaceful connection of, like, D'Angelo Russell's basketball reference page with what's actually playing out on the floor. But that is the context of the NBA, is you do need a guy to be able to do that, particularly in the fourth quarters, particularly late in the shot clock. And I think, as great as Anthony Edwards is, if we got 4 seconds left on the shot clock, I would rather have D'Angelo Russell creating from the top of the key and pulling up from 16 feet than I would Anthony Edwards. And I think that, I mean, maybe Ant gets there this year or in time, but that's an important role in this team. And I think it is part of the, if this team recognizes their upside, they've empowered D'Lo to be that guy if and when they need him to be.
That's right. And hey, Dane, very exciting. I'm so glad that we have you on here, because we have breaking news.
I was going to tell you. I was going to be like, hey, have you looked at your phone?
That we are going to get to here in just a minute. But first, before we get to the very breaking news that every Timberwolves fan has to kind of be interested in, let me tell you about Manscaped. The Olympics, Euros, baseball, major championships, and concerts are all in this summer. You know what isn't? A wild and hairy bush. Tame your pubes with help from our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth-generation performance package includes the brand-new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your body like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and are going to manscaped.com with the promo code ATHLETIC to get you started. The world is starting to open, and the Performance Package 4.0 for Manscaped is here to help you get ready. Inside, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and hair and nose trimmer, Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver Toner, plus two free gifts, the Performance Boxer Briefs and the Shed Travel Bag. The brand new Lawnmower 4.0 is here to take the podium. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. It's waterproof. You can take it in the shower with you. It's got a super long battery. You can take it on the road with you, not have to worry about having to travel with a bunch of stuff with you. Manscaped also threw in two free gifts to the Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ATHLETIC at manscaped.com. And now that that's over, we'll hear a word from TSR Injury Law, Steve Terry, Rich Runin, and all the fellas over there.
This is Steve Terry for TSR Injury Law. If you've been injured in a car crash, it's TSR time. The law firm you choose does make a difference in how the insurance companies treat you. Let them know you demand fairness. Call 612-TSR-TIME for a free consultation. That's 612-TSR time.
Okay, Dane, we're back. We have breaking news. What a time to have you on. So, the NBA Board of Governors just got a text, has approved Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez as limited partners with the Timberwolves and Lynx. We're recording this on Tuesday. It happened Tuesday morning. And we're off and running in the next step in this process. What are your initial thoughts just kind of seeing that, hey, we're at least to this point now in the process and they're going down the road here?
Yeah, well, John, I mean, I've talked about this on my pod. I've talked to this about you off the air. This has been an extremely bizarre process of ownership, you know, in the context of how ownership exchanges typically go down. It oftentimes works like a house, right? Like, you sell your house, you give it to somebody else, and they own the house the next day, right? While the papers are signed, you're clear to go. And in that, it is not going to be that with this. So today's deal is 20% of the team they now own. A year from now, it'll be another 20%, and then they have an option for another 20%, and then a year after that, an option for another 20%. So this is the most interesting element of it to me is how much power do they have when they only have 20% ownership of this team right now? They're moving in the direction and will be someday the full-on owners of this team in all likelihood. But if you go around the league, you look at the other 29 teams, very few of the minority owners who have 20%, you know, ownership stake have a big impact in the day-to-day operations. And my sense from the people I've talked to is that won't be the case here. Pretty immediately, we will see Alex Rodriguez and particularly Mark Lowry really have his fingers on the process of, you know, changing a lot of things in the organization, the way operations run, the business, the basketball operations, all sorts of things where I think you'll see Mark Lowry be, this is my sense at least, I'd get your opinion on it, but kind of like eventually a Mark Cuban type figure where he is this billionaire who isn't going to like hide away in the shadows. He's going to be out there in the public and his view of what the right things to happen are going to happen. And I'm curious when that is going to start happening. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, look, it is one thing to purchase 20% for $250 million. Like I believe that Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry can do that right now and will do that. And everything's going to go through clean there.
Well, it sounds like it has. But that part's
yeah,
done.
Yeah, right. Right. Yes. But I mean, yeah. All of that has been, all this approval today really is a validation of, hey, you have the wherewithal to do this 20%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The tricky part now is going to be, you know, getting to the 60% or however, you know, however much they eventually do, you know, acquire of the Timberwolves. I mean, I'm sure they will bring in their own minority partners eventually to help with some of the money and things like that nature. But they are not doing this in this kind of 2.5 year succession plan just out of the goodness of their heart because Glenn Taylor, you know, wants to hold on to the team. I think that's a small part of it. I do think that is a part of it because if you talk to other ownership groups that have tried to get a deal done with Glenn Taylor, one of the things that they grow frustrated with is that they feel like they get to the 2 yard line and they can't get it into the end zone because Taylor gets cold feet or changes the deal or waffles on things because he's not really ready to give up control yet. And so in some ways, Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry saying, hey, Glenn, you can ride this out for the next 2 years. Let us learn by you. Let us figure out the lay of the land. And that's a great thing. And you can help us with that. I think Glenn Taylor likes that. I think that he appreciates that approach from these two. But the other part of it is they got to get the money. Mm-hmm. Even if Glenn Taylor said, I love you guys, you can buy this whole team right now. I don't think they would have the money to do that. So right. That's going to be a big process over these next couple of years. It is also, you know, why I am not quite as concerned as some people are about the prospects of moving right now, at least in the immediate future. You know, Glenn controlling this team for 2 years gives them a little bit of a buffer zone. And we have to see just how they operate to get to that point of amassing the assets and the wealth and the money to do what they need to do to take over full control of this team. But in the interim, I do think this is not going to be a case where, you know, these guys are just limited partners, minority owners who just sit there and they might show up at games and they might talk to the players and that's it. I think they're going to have a heavy, heavy influence in, you know, the decisions that are made and what kind of money gets spent in, you know, obviously heavy on the business side early. And then eventually I think the basketball side, they'll become more and more involved with, and we'll see if that's a good thing or not.
And that's something to be really excited about if you're a Timberwolves fan, mm-hmm. Like maybe one of the biggest things of the past decade or since the KG era, like stuff's got to change. And that is, mm-hmm. This is a way that things can change. There's no more impactful way to change your organization in any sport, on any team, than to change ownership. It is the czar over everything that is basketball on a team. Mm-hmm. And I think, as someone who covers this team, I'm excited about that. I'm fascinated to see which directions that go. It's going to disrupt the current path that this organization has, you know, has been on, which has been a rough one for the past, you know, quite a long while now. And so I think that is something to be really encouraged about if you're a fan, and it's a reason to start getting a little dreamy eyed about the Anthony Edwards era and what it could, you know, what that could end up looking like. Simultaneously, I am a little bit more wary of the concept of a move than you are. I like to be very clear. I don't think it's a probability. I'm not saying it will for sure happen at all. I just think that it makes sense that it is something that could eventually be explored when, but again, not for years down the road. People are like, oh, well, you think mm-hmm. there's no way they're going to expand. They're going to do all this and that. What I'm saying is, if things go sideways and the motivations of, you know, are financial, that could be something that eventually happens. That could be the case with any team, right? So I think it's a really interesting place right now where I think this could be the beginning of something very new and exciting for the Timberwolves, or it could be the beginning of the end of the Timberwolves. And I think those are both possibilities of where this goes. Where I land on it is like, man, if the latter, the move is 10%, but it's a 90% chance that things are just changing, give me those odds. Like, give me that. I will mm-hmm. risk the Timberwolves moving for the possibility of things changing. I think that's a wild positive for the future of the franchise.
I mean, just look at the final four teams in the playoffs. Bucks, yep. Suns, Clippers, Hawks. They all have changed ownerships in the fairly recent history here. They've all been galvanized and energized by new owners. They all, at one point not too long ago, were kind of viewed as these organizations that were going nowhere, that were stuck in the mud. You know, for the Clippers, they had kind of, you know, they had kind of gotten to a point in the playoffs, at least, where they were competitive, but with the Suns, I mean, they were a laughingstock for a long time. And, you know, same with
not
the
that
Hawks.
Long ago.
Same, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
the goat poop story in the Suns?
Yeah, thing? Exactly.
That was like 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And
Google it.
And so, you know, part of it obviously is that you know, hey, they got really good players. The Bucks got lucky with Giannis. I mean, Trae Young has blossomed. Like that's a major, major part of what they've been able to do. But I do think that there is value in new perspective, fresh energy. You know, we'll see. But here's the thing that I think everyone does have to brace for. Like, there's a very high probability that these two are going to come in and they're going to make mistakes early. You see it a lot when new owners don't really get the lay of the land. They don't really understand how things operate, and they make decisions that end up blowing up in their faces. And
yeah, being a little too
it doesn't mean
right away, right?
Yep,
making a coaching change before it makes sense,
yep.
Making a front office change that doesn't make sense or is premature. Yeah. I think that. Right. I'm kind of pumped, like banging the Laurie and A-Rod are awesome drum here right now. But you're right. That's that's very much a possibility.
Because they're both not like quote unquote NBA guys. Like, you know, they are, you know, they're fans and they've been around the league a little bit. But I think like if you were to ask Mark Laurie, you know, when he first kind of jumped onto this, like, hey, you know, tell me about the salary cap or things like mm-hmm. like he just wouldn't have any idea. And I'm sure that they've been taking a crash course on it and getting ready, but there's really just nothing that prepares you for this experience until you're submerged in it. So so that will be interesting, but I do think like there will be aggressiveness, there will be a different vibe around, which I think is probably
you think we'll feel that this year, John? You think we'll feel that at all this
year? I think
year?
So. Yeah, I do. Okay. I think there will be, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, I don't think that they're immediately going to say, well, here's $250 million. Let's go into the luxury tax and go, you know, and go after it. I don't think it's going to be like that. But I do think that there will be, my impression is when fans go to the arena, there will be different things in place that try to make it more of an event. I think that's what the Hawks have talked about a lot, right? Is like they had to make the arena a fun place to be again. And, you know, obviously, you know, having Trae Young shooting 30 footers really helps with that. But I do think that there was like kind of a tangible try to reconnect with the community. And because the Hawks were like, they were an afterthought down in Atlanta. No one was thinking about them. They weren't a cool a product or anything like that. And so people were just like, you know, I might watch them home, but I'm really Falcons and Braves. And so I think that there will, you know, there will be these cosmetic changes to the fan experience that is going to try to inject some sort of energy and and different experience. This like, hey, this is different coming here and watching this game. This is fun. Now, the other part that would help is that if these guys get their act together on the court and are at least in the conversation for, you know, 8, 9, 10, 7, 8, 9, 10, something like that. And are competitive, you know, that, that would help too, because I, that's where I think Anthony Edwards comes in big time.
That's just what I was going to say.
It's like, you know, he's a mini Randy Moss in terms of like fans love the dude and he's exciting and he's fun and he's charismatic and they have connected with him already. I think in a way that for whatever reason, right or wrong, just Cat has not had with them. And so I think that's going to help them as well, kind of gain a little bit more traction. He just seems like a cool dude. It's a fun style of play. And I think people will get behind that as well.
I think, John, it's really important to start to recultivate a new part of the fan base. I think, I mean, the way I view it is like the majority, not that there isn't a diehard part of this fan base. You know, I both know that's true, but I think it's a bunch of people who are like around my age who, you know, grew up watching KG. And there's just like, that was their connection. I mean, I guarantee it's the same for you. Talk to people and they're like, oh yeah, man, I was at the 04 playoffs. Like my dad bought his tickets and we were there. And you know, it's that conversation they have all the time. And those people, like for the large part, are like hooked. You know, they're the people who are listening to this podcast right now, who are, you know, reading our stuff. Like, You have that. But what about the people who are under 25 years old? Like, if you're 18 right now, you like almost, you pretty much weren't even alive during the KG era of
like, you can drive a car if you were born
post Western Conference.
On the day of game seven, if you were conceived on the day of game seven, you know, dad and mom came home, they were really excited, you know, hey, got out their manscaped. The Wolves won, they're going to the Western Conference Finals, let's put on some Barry White and let's have some fun tonight, you know, and you were conceived that day, you're driving a car today, you know, but that's right. It's just, there's an entire generation of fans that just haven't gotten that hook put in them. Rubio almost did his rookie year, and then he's tore his ACL because
But even that's 10 years ago, man.
And that was 10 years ago. You're right. Yeah. The Butler thing was short lived. So absolutely.
I feel like there's been, you know, strides to connect with that part of the fan base with like the green yellow jerseys and all that sort of stuff. But I don't, you know, I don't think it works. And if I was Mark Laurie and I was coming in now, I would be concerned about having missed out on multiple decades of Minnesotans being able to, you know, connect to this fan base. My whole thing, and I don't even know if this is legal for like NBA wise, but I think kids should be able to go to the upper deck for free. Like I think
100%.
If a parent is there with them, like if they come with an adult, kid tickets should be free for the upper deck, still charge dad 15, 20 bucks or whatever. But they should be able to go. Like, you need people. And again, to the Anthony Edwards point, the Randy Moss point, whatever that is, like, get them in the building to see these players. A lot of people can't watch it on TV at home because of the, which isn't the Timberwolves' fault. That's the Sinclair's fault. But we're at a point where you gotta do it. You gotta start mm-hmm. getting people back connected to this sort of thing. And the conversation about the Timberwolves needs to not always lead to laughing and a joke
yep.
and they're terrible. And we live it. Like that's what most of it is. Some people love to talk about, some people like, oh, you know, what would the mechanics of a Ben Simmons trade be and this and that. The most people that we talk to that are our friends are people who are like, wake me up when this isn't a joke anymore. And
yep.
and that's where ownership comes in. That's where you start making big, profound changes, disrupting the pattern of the way things have gone. And Anthony Edwards is your catalyst to that. He is. So like the time is now to regather a group. You got a solid roster that can threaten for the playoffs. Like they can't mess up these next 5 years. That would be that would be the death knell. That would be the 10% I was talking about before.
For sure.
That goes up if you mess this up.
For sure. And that's, you know, like, look, there's going to be, you know, we're recording this Tuesday, but right before game six, there's going to be 60,000 fans outside the arena in Milwaukee and watching that game tonight in the Deer District. And that is a franchise that was such a stale, uncool thing in the Packers shed. No one cared about it, kind of a situation. And now look where they are. And I really do believe like there is such an undercurrent of mm-hmm. basketball fans in this community that are begging, just give me a reason. Just don't, you know, make sure that I don't embarrass myself by proclaiming my love for the NBA and my affection for the Timberwolves. And I will jump on board. And, you know, if the Wolves ever years down the road got to a point where they were in that type of a scenario, I think that there would be a very similar environment. It would be just, you know, just crazy. People would be coming out of the woodwork and that, but that's it. You're right. Like now is the time that they have to capitalize and build some momentum and get moving that way, or else 5, 6, 7 years from now, we could be looking at a lot more, you know, a lot more depressing situation, and you're holding on to the franchise for dear life.
Yeah, you're fighting for something now. I mean, that's just, and I know and people get mad when I even talk like this, like all doomsday or whatever, but that's the way I view it, and I think there's a great opportunity to grow something special there. I mean, I remember being my first year on the beat, going to a game at Bradley Center, which was the old, you know, the old Buck Stadium. And well, that was a dump. But it was also, it was right before Jason Kidd got fired. He was the coach that year. And oh man, it was roaring boos in that little stadium for Kidd when they, you know, when they announced him, much like it was with Tibbs at the end of the time here. But I've thought about that a lot. Like turned out when I see that Deer District and that of like, man, I was at that stadium and everyone who paid money to go to this Bucks game hated the team. And it's like, it changes. It can change. Like, and that Giannis was on the team then, you know, Giannis was pretty close to Anthony Edwards' age at that time. So there is a possibility here, and right, if you build it, they will come. That's the hope here, but it is a fine line. It's a delicate balance, because I do think the Wolves currently, the history of their franchise is in a worse spot than the history of, you know, of the Bucks franchise one was there, like was 4 years ago, you know? So, I'm excited to see what happens, but it's a serious time. It's like, let's get serious about this team. We can't do the same thing for 5 more years.
Absolutely. Well, Dane, one thing about the John Krasinski show is it is not as long as the Dane Moore podcast. So we try and keep it a little bit tighter in general than you Beloviators over there. But hey, man, I appreciate you stopping by. This is a lot of fun to catch up. Looking forward to maybe being around each other on draft night, even though the Wolves don't have a pick. I think we'll probably end up over there some way, somehow. And we'll catch up again down the road. But thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'll have you on mine, and then we'll get into all the Ben Simmons talk that we could possibly imagine at that point. We'll do like 95 minutes just on all the machinations of Ben Simmons trades.
I'll drink some like hot tea with lemon to get my vocal cords ready to go, and we'll go deep on it. But a reminder too that the John Krasinski Show is brought to you by TSR Injury Law and Manscaped. And thanks again for listening, everyone. And we'll be back next week with another show. Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.